This is The State of Things. We're live from the Upstage Cabaret and Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Violence in media is hard to escape these days. The biggest movie at the box office over the weekend was a bloody horror movie. The most watched TV program these days is NFL football. And social media is, of course, a haven for sharing violent and aggressive messages of all sorts. So what role does all of this have in promoting social violence? Emily Edwards is a professor of media studies at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and she says people want to blame video games or fake news or entertainment, but the issue of violence in our society is far more complicated than all of that. Her book is called Graphic Violence, Illustrated Theories About Violence, Popular Media, and Our Social Lives, and she is with us again here on The State of Things. Emily, welcome back to The State of Things.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So obviously with this rash of school shootings and the number of mass homicides, mass shootings in America, we're all asking ourselves, where's all this coming from? Obviously easy gun access is one of the reasons, but there's more. I mean, people are using those guns and they're violent. What's going on? I mean, how much of this do we attribute, or how much of that was what you were looking at in your study?
Well, I have been looking at this for a while. I started actually in graduate school a long time ago. My professor was Jack Haskins, who had been an advertising guy. He'd studied advertising, but he changed because, and this was back in the 80s, he was finding that it depressed him and upset him to watch the news, but he wanted to be an informed citizen. So he started, and a lot of us do this, we study the things that are closest to us. I was a police and dead body reporter, and so I gravitated to his research.
Dead body reporter.
The fuzz and was the police and dead bodies. So, you know, you get, your assignment editors listening to the police scanner will send you out for a story.
Whenever you hear medical examiner, you go.
I did that for a while, and I didn't particularly enjoy it. But when I went back to graduate school, I wanted to understand it better. And so I fell into Jack Haskins' research. And he was looking at hypernegative communications or hypernegative media, things that are really repugnant, really violent, really disgusting. And why are they so popular? You know, what's drawing people to those kinds of movies, to those kinds? Why do we like that kind of violence in our lives? Even though it's not real, it's fiction. Although the news is also something we tune into, and it's real, though it may not be real for us, for the audience watching.
And the debate is an old one. I mean, you know, it goes back at least to the 60s, even in the 50s, they were going to ban comic books, right? They censored comic books because that was creating juvenile delinquents, right? And then, well, you know, of course, by the way, why Mad Magazine went from a comic to a magazine.
Because
that they could escape the censorship.
Yeah.
But so, and then in the 60s, of course, what TV violence, we're watching all this stuff and it's making us more violent. We only had three networks. And now, of course, in the age of social media, when we're seeing things that the TV network never would have put on.
Well, yeah. And one of the things just recently with the last shooting, there was people keep talking about the newest medium, which is video games. But the interesting thing is that if video games were causing violence, when video games were coming out and barely saturating the marketplace, you would expect for violence to increase. Well, actually, in the 90s, violence started going down. Social violence went down.
Right, and violent crime.
Violent crime, you know, that was actually going down steadily. It's starting to creep back up, but it was going down really steadily, just as those video games, that first-person shooter game, was really saturating the marketplace. Billions of dollars, you know, as a product. So, you know, that's not what the what the direct effects, which you just mentioned with comic books, that's the idea that these things are directly affecting us. By the way, human beings have been entertaining ourselves with violence long before we had media, social media or film or any kind of media.
Yeah, there's a lot of bloodshed in the Iliad.
Yeah.
It's a 3-day poem, and the people stuck around for the gore, believe me.
Yeah. Yes. So, we've been looking at violence and attracted to violence. So, one of the interesting answers to the question is in sociobiology. That's one of the things I liked about Haskins was he looked outside of media at lots of different areas of research and brought them together to look at this big question. Sociobiology says that we're wired to pay attention. Mm-hmm. Even if we don't, I mean, some people are actually seeking out the horror movie, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But we're wired to tune in. So it's just like the wreck on the highway. We're wired to look at that. Some of it is just preservation. So the thinking is that when we were a more ancient animal, that that noticing and paying attention to a dead animal or a mangled animal or human being, was a sign that there was some danger in the environment.
Yeah, well, and paying attention to the proximate cause. If you were there for the event that took mm-hmm. the animal's life, you're learning something about the predator and the prey, and that's going to be important to you going forward. So I think we can understand, sort of intuitively why we would be interested. Mm-hmm. And of course, that takes you back to, again, these theories of why we're making the films. Filmmakers, news directors, if it bleeds, mm-hmm. it leads, mm-hmm. right? They're not saying, gosh, mass homicides are going up. I think we should show more automobile accidents. Mm-hmm. Kind of went the other way around. So clearly the interest was there before right. these precipitating events. Is there any correlation between, sort of the reinforcement of this so regularly and perhaps not the bell curve, not mm-hmm. the violent crime statistics, which right. is kind of the bell, but the outliers. Are people pushed to the edge because so much is available?
Well, people pushed. Well,
yeah,
one
the
of
mass
the things,
killers, the people
one of the
who are
things
on the edge
I was going to mention in, is there is this theory called mean world hypothesis, right? So the idea is that, okay, so George Gerbner did this research. He started it back in the 80s, 90s, he's been doing this research. And what he did was actually count the number. He was looking at television. So he counted the number of times a violent incident happened on television. And then he compared that to violence in the real world. And what he noticed is this big discrepancy. People are getting killed and hurt and maimed and shoved and pushed and, a lot more on television than they are in the real world. He then started looking at people who watched a lot of television, and he noticed that their perception of the world they lived in was not a very positive one. They were fearful. They thought, and so that's the mean world hypothesis. So people thinking that, I'm in danger. And that might result in a lot of different kinds of behaviors, everything from, buying a gun to protect yourself, or living in a gated community, or being suspicious of people you don't know, or thinking that people in general are just no good.
Yeah, and so that really brings us back to some of the root issues. Again, if we've always been attracted to violence, if we've mm-hmm. been showing violence enough, and we can't really correlate mm-hmm. an increase in violent messages, as you say, when video games take mm-hmm. off, mm-hmm. violent crime goes down, then we really start having a look at some of the root causes. What's happening in your social order to make mm-hmm. people feel that violence is their only answer? And then you might be able to see
well,
some...
Yeah, one of the... And I'm probably going to anger at least half of your audience.
That's what
now.
You're here for.
That's what I'm here for. Okay. One of the things that I looked at is hypermasculinity, and that is a media phenomenon. Well, it's not only a media phenomenon. It belongs to really the entire culture. Mm. So this is the idea of how we define a man and how we reinforce that definition. So it even happens when little boys are really small. You can't cry, grow up, be a man, be tough, And media depictions of manhood a lot of times don't allow for a variety of responses. I mean, you're allowed to be, as a man, you're allowed to be angry mm-hmm. and aggressive. And there's even something now, my research showed muscle dysmorphia, which is where we have known for a long time that media have been bad about images of women and girls. So you have, I mean, we know the damage there. You have to be beautiful. You have to look a certain way. Well, it's equally bad for men. You have to be tough. You have to be strong. And there's been some really damage done with young men trying to achieve this body that is impossible for them to achieve. So if you can't be, if you can't show your emotions, you can't achieve the body. And the other thing is, you mentioned this earlier, with an attention economy, if you think that your life is not valuable unless you are a celebrity. So you have a lot of people, or especially young men, who feel extremely frustrated by what they're not able to achieve. But violence is how you mark manhood, so it's one way to prove yourself.
And of course, this has been part of the issue for, and I think why we see the need for the rise of feminism, because of this anxiety that men have felt for well over a century now, particularly in the industrial age. It's like, what does it mean to be a man? We don't hunt anymore. We don't have to lift heavy things. The machines do all that. And you can see that anxiety in literature and in the press. Even by the end of the 19th century, men are worrying about what it means to be a man. And of course, things have gone on steroids since then, literally, which is where some of the dysmorphia comes in. But again, it's kind of a chicken egg thing, is it not? And one that we can actually define. It does seem to me that, from what I understand of the media follows. If they see a trend, if this is what men want to look like, because Humphrey Bogart was a tough guy, but he wasn't bulky, he's a skinny guy. So they were given images, showing images back that people wanted to see, that people already believed. And I think that's what. Does the media do that, or how? To what extent can they lead those trends?
Well, I think that for too long our media have not been very diverse at the top. Yeah. People who make those decisions, and then they also look to, if you know that people are hardwired to pay attention to certain things, then you just create more of them. So it feeds back on itself. I think one of the things I'm hoping with some of my students out there listening, you know, I'm hoping that they will bring a diversity of voices, new stories, new depictions of manhood that are allow characters to show their emotional depth, allow a character to be clever. You know, you don't have to whip out a gun to solve a problem. You know, allow for discussion. You know, so I'm hoping that we'll be able to see more and more better and more authentic depictions of manhood in our media.
Now that we're diversifying, are you seeing some evidence? Because we're seeing now more diversity in writing rooms, and some of it through some of the other platforms.
And there's been some pushback for it too. I mean, one of the things has been to try to make women as tough as men, which you have characters that, well, Mad Max, Fury Road. There was actually pushback on that one with a female lead.
It's what I call the Virginia Slim syndrome, where you finally achieve equality, so you too may die of lung cancer.
Hold it. So, you can go out there and be violent, and you can have a gun. Yeah. It's not a very authentic depiction of femininity or how women might handle a situation. But I think that we are. I mean, the newer Star Wars I found interesting, although people didn't like that either. But what I liked about it was that you had some more thoughtful female characters, but also that the idea of one of the young male characters wanted to get out and actually blow things up, and he was reined in. He was stopped from doing that. And also the idea that the stormtrooper. You know, we've just, in the earlier movies, we just saw them as, you know, something to be mowed down. They got in the way. But then we get to say, well, wait a minute. There's a human being underneath there who is having thoughts about whether or not he wants to be a soldier for the Empire.
Yeah, very good stuff. One more note I want to ask you about this, because I know your book is part textbook, part graphic novel with illustrations from Tristan Fuller. Talk about that and the idea of...
Okay, so I'm interested in the idea of story, and this is a book about theory. So I think of theory as a very abstract story. But at the same time, you know, theory is the story that our data tells us. But at the same time, we think about anecdotal data, the stories that we live that are idiosyncratic and have lots of details about who we are and the, you know, the quirks and things within a story that theory, abstract theory, doesn't have. So I wanted to bring in those kinds of stories. So I collected lots of stories that I thought worked with the different theories, and then created walkthroughs. And Tristan Fuller, who's really a young artist, it was a lot of fun working with him. He's actually the son of a former graduate student of mine. He was a student at Savannah School of Art and Design, and my former student, Brian Fuller, put us together, and Tristan came up with some great ideas. So I thought that it might make it more palatable for people to have this visual expression in the book rather than reading something that, and I tried not to be dry.
It's an object lesson in making, breathing full human life into mm-hmm. the story about mm-hmm. what's human life coming to in the age mm-hmm. of social media. So thank you so much for your work.
Well, thank you for having me.
Emily Edwards, a professor of media studies at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. The book is called Graphic Violence, Illustrated Theories About Violence, Popular Media, and Our Social Lives. You can find links at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, Grant Holub-Moorman. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wadarski is engineering the show as well. Josie Taurus is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio. Once again, the music of the House of Dews.
She's in love with the treble and the bass. Likes to feel the hook on her hips and on her face. A knock in the fat sound, on out of it. More than the actual, with sparkling grip. Never lonely. On a crowd or in the street, music comes free, make you move your feet. Grooves the size 700 years. The art of wonder, the music from the spheres. Thank you. we laugh and cry. When we exit stage left, when we get shanghaied. Well, some kind of dream, well, a masquerade. On a ship of fools who were on parade. The sounds we're making are crushing a lie. Where we all get left when the hero dies. We cry and we shout, where we try and please. Yeah, but sometimes the juice just ain't worth the squeeze. Yeah, sometimes the juice just ain't worth the squeeze.